And it's by a paper by Witten, and it's the paper in which he discovers what's now called the bubble of nothing. And one of the ways you can know it's such a great paper is that the bubble of nothing was forgotten about and subsequently rediscovered some years later. And you can do a comparative analysis of the two literatures that discover it. And the people who rediscovered it were prose, but they weren't as good as Witten, because what they spent sort of 20 papers of higher mathematics and numerical simulations doing, Witten does in 4 pages. And the second half of his 8-page paper, they never ever get anywhere near. And he never uses anything more complicated than the metric for a black hole. What is the bubble of nothing? It's a dramatic instability, a cataclysmic instability of a space with an extra dimension. So we're going to be in 3 plus 1 plus 1 dimensions. What I really mean is 4 plus 1 dimensions compactified on an S1. Empty Minkowski space. Just a vacuum of Minkowski space with Einstein gravity and nothing else. And here's a snapshot of this space-time at a fixed time. So a snapshot of a space. There's R3, and then there's what I'm going to call phi, which is just the extra dimension. The idea of this diagram is that if you go off in that direction, you come back from that direction, because it's compactified on an S1. This space has a non-perturbative instability. The non-perturbative instability is for the size of the extra dimension to pinch off. So that a snapshot immediately after tunneling, immediately after the nucleation of this bubble, looks like that. And something funny is going on with dr as r goes to 1, but the size of the extra dimension is more than 1 for r bigger than 1, but goes to 0 at r equals 1. What this looks like in 3 plus 1 dimensions is, from the 3 plus 1 dimensional perspective, is you start off with a space-time where the everywhere throughout your 3 plus 1 dimensional space, the size of the extra dimension is the same everywhere, let's say 1 meter. And then you tunnel to a configuration in which asymptotically it's still 1 meter. But as you come in, the extra dimension gets smaller and smaller and smaller until about 1 meter out from the center, the size of the extra dimension pinches off to 0. And then inside of there, the extra dimension has no size and there is what is called nothing. It's not just that there's no fields and no matter, it's that there's no space and no time. The extra dimension has smoothly pinched off, there's no singularity, but any incoming particle you shoot at this thing bounces off. You have created a bubble of nothing. In fact, the situation is somewhat more dire than that, because this bubble of nothing then expands. So at the instant of nucleation, it has a certain size, but then it expands approaching the speed of light, this excluded volume, this excluded region, growing and growing and growing, like a bubble that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, faster and faster and faster, gobbling up space-time. Okay, so that's the bubble of nothing. We can schematically draw that as the instability, and Witten calculated the rate for this process. The rate for this process, this instability, goes like e to the minus L squared, the size of the extra dimension, over h bar g. The fact that there's an L on top there means that as you take L to infinity, as you recover 4 plus 1 dimensional Minkowski, the rate for this process goes to 0. And that has to be right, because you know that 4 plus 1 dimensional Minkowski is stable. There's a positive energy theorem that guarantees that you can't do any instability like this of 4 plus 1 dimensional empty Minkowski space. As well as that L squared on top, there's also an h bar on the bottom. So this is a process that goes like e to the minus 1 over h bar. Things that go like e to the minus 1 over h bar are characteristic of quantum tunneling events. Non-perturbative quantum tunneling events, the rate goes to 0 faster than any power of h bar. So what you should think of, this process has happened, is that you tunneled through some sort of ersatz barrier to go from here to here. Now, from one-dimensional quantum mechanics, for example, you should be familiar that there's actually two kind of ways to get across a barrier. One kind of way to get across a barrier is to quantum mechanically tunnel through the barrier. E to the minus 1 over h bar scales the rate. Another way to get across a barrier is to thermally fluctuate over the barrier. The typical rate for that goes like e to the minus 1 over t. Rather than non-perturbative in h bar, it's non-perturbative in t. And so you might ask, the Witten bubble of nothing, the normal bubble of nothing, is a quantum process that scales like e to the minus 1 over h bar. Is there also a thermal process in which you thermally fluctuate to having created a bubble of nothing rather than quantum mechanically tunnel? And the answer to this question is yes. Furthermore, you might ask, is there a hybrid process in which you fluctuate partway up thermally and then quantum mechanically tunnel through the rest? And the answer to that question, we will see, is also yes. More generally, we're going to be asking the following question. To have this set of decays, you need to have a thermal bubble of nothing, we're going to have two things present. To have the bubble of nothing at all, we're going to have the extra dimensions. We're going to have to be in KK space. And in order for it to be a thermal bubble of nothing, we're going to have a non-zero temperature. Otherwise, the rate will be zero. So we're asking about the instability of Minkowski space with two destabilizing elements, one of which is a compactified extra dimension, and the other of which is a temperature. And both of these two cases have been considered individually before. People have considered individually the destabilization introduced into Minkowski space, otherwise empty Minkowski space, by temperature, and the destabilization introduced into otherwise empty Minkowski space by an extra dimension. And there's some sort of post-selection going on in choosing this question to ask about in this talk, because we're going to see that those two kind of decays get combined in an interesting way. Those two actually, the hot decays and the KK decays, and then the combined hot KK decays, are going to make a fun story when added together.
Just to clarify, there are hopefully nothing that includes the direction. You're just going to be talking about the ones that are just cool.
No. So to have a bubble of nothing, you need to have an extra dimension in this manner.
Well, you need to have more than four if you're going to not have problems. But there are in say asymptotes with flat higher dimensions.
Sorry, say that again.
Say asymptotes with flat higher dimensions or ABS, they do exist.
So five-dimensional Minkowski space or six-dimensional, seven-dimensional Minkowski space, they're all stable. They're absolutely stable. So there's no non-perturbative decays, including no bubbles or nothing. So by the positive energy theorem.
They don't apply in the case where you apply the boundary conditions where you can have this. This may not be the central point of what, I don't know if this is central for what you're saying.
It's not central for what I'm saying, but I don't think it's true. If you have Minkowski space and any number of empty Minkowski space is absolutely stable and has no bubbles or nothing. You need to have the extra dimension in order to have a bubble of nothing.
No, in this other case, as well, those bubbles of nothing don't represent a negative energy instability.
Okay, maybe we can talk about it afterwards. I don't think it's going to be relevant to what I'm saying, but I'm confused by what your claim. Okay. Okay, so let's ask this question. What are the decays of hot KK space? To say again, I'm in Minkowski space with, maybe this plus is confusing. You think there's two times. 3+1 dimensional Minkowski space plus an extra spatial S1. So it's four dimensional Minkowski space compactified down. And then there's Einstein gravity only. That's the only thing in our metric, nothing else. Just pure, in this case, five dimensional Einstein gravity. A similar story plays out in any other number of dimensions, but for simplicity, let's stick in five total space-time dimensions. Okay, so I claim that if the temperature is zero and if there's no extra dimension, then this is absolutely stable by the positive energy theorem. There are no decays of the space, t equals zero. So the question is going to be what happens when we add these two complications. As I've already described, but I will describe in more mathematical detail later, when you have a compact extra dimension, you have the possibility of bubbles of nothing. At t equals zero, the only bubble of nothing is the Witten bubble of nothing, the quantum mechanically nucleated bubble of nothing. We will also see that at t greater than zero, in addition, you have the possibility of the thermal nucleation of a bubble of nothing, making a bubble by thermal tunneling. But actually, before I get onto this, let's talk about what happens in this upper right-hand quadrant here. This is a space-time that does not have an extra dimension, but has a positive temperature. So since we have a positive temperature, space-time is going to be full of a gas of gravitons, and we're going to be asking about the non-perturbative instability of this space-time. So you just have a space-time that has a thermal gas of gravitons moving around at some fixed temperature. And what happens to this space-time? Well, the answer to that was given by Gross, Perry, and Yaffe in 1982 also. And the answer is that it has a non-perturbative instability to nucleate a black hole.
Is this a cosmology or a
right.
Singularity at the beginning? I mean, what is this
space time? So in this paper, so there are long wavelength IR, I mean, I will come back to that because that is an important question. There are long wavelength things that happen to this space time. Right. For example, there is a Hubble length. There is also in fact, it's the same scale, a Jeans length, which gives a perturbative instability. And there are a whole bunch of funny things that happen if you go out to an IR scale. But the Jeans length for this space-time is given by, let me get this right. It's given by the beta squared, which is h bar over t, divided by the Planck length. And so this is a...
So literally no other radiation, and you're just considering gravitons.
That's right. To keep things as simple as possible, I'm just going to consider gravitons. But that doesn't really make any difference to any of this. I mean, then you have the same...
You can't really calculate.
I am going to be able to calculate things, yeah. So there's going to be three scales. There's a UV scale, which is the Planck scale.
Right.
There's the temperature scale, which I'm going to assume is...
And lots of IR.
Which is, I'm going to assume, is longer than the Planck scale considerably. And then there's an IR scale, which is this scale, where, for example, the Jeans instability is going to come in.
Right.
And as long as beta, as long as the temperature is subplanckian, these things are all well separated, and we can calculate well. For example, these people did the calculation, and there's a well-defined sense in which this calculation is correct. I mean, so, for example, I could kill of all these IR divergences by putting the space-time in a box, for example, that was much longer than beta, but much shorter than the Jeans length. I could, for example, make that box in ADS space if I consider doing this calculation in an ADS space with a ADS length that's very much longer than all the non-perturbative length scales, but much shorter than the perturbative length scales. Then I've killed all the IR divergences. I've killed the tendency of this space-time to grow. I've killed the Jeans instability. Everything is exactly well-defined. I have killed all of the perturbative instabilities, and the only instabilities are the non-perturbative instability I'm about to describe. Kurt, do you have a question?
So with your previous slide, so suppose I take the 5D theory and I lose a Klein, reduce it, and I get some infinite power of Mohs in 4D, and I try to use the 4D positive energy theorem on that system to claim that 5D is the state model. What goes wrong?
So the positive energy, the standard version of the positive energy theorem only involves empty Einstein gravity in the first. I mean, that's the one I know. Maybe you're going to say there's souped up versions that.
You're allowed to put matter in, and there's some energy condition.
They work for
supergravity
because
the
I mean, the only one, if you say that there's a more, the only one I know is the simple one on Minkowski space. There's presumably more sophisticated ones that work sometimes, and presumably they don't work here since this is stable. Unstable.
There was a paper by Donahue and Holstein which showed that the gross Perry-Yaffe calculations were incorrect in detail.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
They neglected certain diagrams.
Okay, so
I think it only changes numerical factors, but don't rely on that.
Okay.
And I was at a talk where David Gross was there, and he accepted.
Okay. Well.
I believe there are errors in that.
Okay. So the bits that I'll rely on, I've personally checked and are okay. My guess is if you say that it was diagrams they missed, then it would be the one loop corrections that they'd have got wrong, and I'm not going to be interested in the one loop corrections. I'm just going to be interested in the leading order exponential piece. Okay, any more questions?
I guess by instability, you mean energetic, dynamical,
This is going to be, a bubble of nothing is a dynamical instability, and it's bubbles of nothing that I'm interested in. I guess the black hole that I'm about to discuss is also a dynamical instability. There's something that actually happens to the space-time.
Yeah, it's not an energetic. In the sense that you don't get negative energy states.
There are negative energy states in these space-times. There are states of arbitrarily negative energy, and in some sense, the bubble of nothing has, the bubble of nothing, at least the Witten bubble of nothing, has zero energy. It has the same energy as the vacuum because it's a quantum decay, so it can't change energy. But there do exist negative energy bubbles of nothing, sure, which are larger than the ones you decay into, sure, and those are part of the story about how it decays. So yeah, I'd say if you want to use that language, I'd say it's both the energetic and a dynamical instability.
Sorry, just to be clear, so say you make one of these black holes.
Right.
And then there's a little fluctuation, the black hole gets a little bit colder, it gets bigger. Now it's going to keep growing.
Correct, yes. Okay. Yeah, so in fact, I'm just about to get that, but yes, that's correct. This is a instability that is going to grow and kill space-time, as you know it. Okay, so we have our thermal gas of gravitons at a temperature T, and the instability is to make a black hole. Black holes, a la Hawking, have a temperature, and that temperature is inversely proportional to their size. The temperature of the thermal radiation emitted by a black hole is up to some order one factor equal to the Schwarzschild radius of that black hole. So small ones have a short wavelength and are hot. Large ones have a long wavelength and are cold. And that means that if you nucleate, just by some random thermal fluctuation, a tiny black hole, it'll be hotter than the heat bath. It'll emit energy, it'll get hotter, it'll shrink and get hotter and shrink and get hotter and be reclaimed by the heat bath and go away. On the other hand, if you fluctuate a black hole that's large enough, it's colder than the heat bath, and so it's going to absorb more radiation from the heat bath, but because black holes have negative specific heat, it'll then get colder and colder and colder and keep growing and growing and growing, and it'll eat up your entire space-time. So there's a critical black hole where the temperature of the black hole is equal to the temperature of the heat bath, and that's the critical black hole, the smallest possible black hole that you can nucleate that has a chance to live forever. And if you like, you can draw this diagram, which is the free energy of the black hole as a function of the size of the black hole. And to begin with, the black hole just wants to disappear, but then there's this black hole that's at the same temperature as the thermal radiation. And if you put it there, then it has about a 50-50 chance of living or dying. It'll either fluctuate bigger or fluctuate smaller. And if it's any bigger than that, then it's semi-classically guaranteed to live forever. So this is a pretty dramatic instability of the space-time. You make a black hole that's just big enough. I mean, you could make a black hole of any size, but the exponentially most likely thing for you to do is to make one that's just big enough to live forever. And then it keeps growing, and it's going to grow and grow and grow and eat up all of the thermal radiation in your space-time. What's the rate for this process? Well, the rate for this process is just the Boltzmann factor. In fact, this is just a pure thermal fluctuation. There's no quantum tunneling involved. You just purely thermally fluctuate up to the top here, and then the rate is given by the Boltzmann factor, e to the minus the free energy of the black hole, which is given by this. And you say that Gross-Perry-Yaffe-Neel is unreliable, and then there's going to be some prefactor here that I'm suppressing that is apparently unreliable. So actually, in this calculation, in calculating the free energy, you have to include the entropy of the black hole as well as the energy of the black hole to get it all work out. Those things scale the same. And so that is the decay of KK space. And then let me just say again here what I said on the board. I hope I said the same thing. That there's various perturbative instabilities of this space-time. And there's a question of if you have a perturbative instability, are non-perturbative instabilities of the space-time moot? And the reason they're not is precisely this reason, is that all the perturbative instabilities, for example, the famous genes instability responsible for the existence of the Earth, happen on an IR scale that's much, much longer wavelength than the size of the black hole that you nucleate.
It's not exponentially suppressed in time, but it will happen first if you have...
If you permit it. If you have boundary permissions that permit it, yeah, this will happen first. Yeah. But there is a... Since if you do have boundary permissions that permit this, then typically, if you're in the semi-classical regime, this will happen before the black hole, and we'll end up swamping it.
Yeah.
But you can forbid it with boundary conditions,
so
exactly.
ADS, I guess.
ADS or in a box, or there's just some version of boundary conditions are gonna kill it. Okay. Any more questions? Okay, so if you have no extra dimension, by which I guess you can make a black hole at positive temperature, and that's the non-perturbative instability of this space-time. If you have an extra dimension as well as the temperature, there's actually another version of this instability, and that's because in five dimensions, as well as making a black hole, you can make a black string. So really, if you have the extra dimension presence, there's two kinds of black object that you can nucleate. You can make a five-dimensional Schwarzschild black hole that just sits there, that's localized in all dimensions, in all spatial dimensions, including in the extra dimension. Or you can make a black string that wraps around the extra dimension and goes round all the way around the extra dimension. In general, you can make a black string anywhere you like, but just in higher dimensions, the allowed topology of the horizon is either S3 or is S2 cross S1, or S2 cross R. The fastest way to make it is going to be to wrap the smallest cycle that there is, which is going to be the extra dimension. Which of these two processes wins is going to depend on the temperature, or more precisely, it's going to depend on some ratio between the temperature and the size of the extra dimension. Because if you change the temperature, what these two look like changes. So there's this phenomena where the extra dimension swells a little to accommodate the black hole. That's been discovered numerically and actually analytically as well in perturbation theory. So that's not going to be essential to what I'm going to be saying. The essential fact of what I'm going to be saying is that the if you look for a black hole or a black string in thermal equilibrium, some gas of temperature T, just as for the Hawking case, for the black hole case, for the black hole in infinite space case, hotter means smaller, colder means bigger. The bigger a black hole or a black string is, the colder it is. And so now you can ask about what they look like in throughout a full spectrum of temperature. And the answer that you get is this. The colder it gets, the bigger the black hole and the black string get. And something goes wrong with black holes at too cold a temperature. These are called, in the literature, these are called caged black holes, is what they're called. They're caged because they are trapped in the extra dimension. And so that's what people call them, and there's a tradition of doing perturbative calculations on these these are very easy. These are just the Schwarzschild metric cos S1, but these ones there's a problem with that everything gets very messy because of these extra dimensions swelling, so you need to do numerical or perturbative calculations. As the black hole gets colder and colder, it grows and grows and grows and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And at too cold a temperature, you don't have a black hole anymore. What happens, if you like, is the black hole's got so big that it's gone and collided with itself around the extra dimension, and then it ceases to exist as a solution to the equations of motion. And there is no black hole that's below a certain temperature. The only solution to the equations of motion, the only stable, the only black object is a black string. At the other end, at the hot end, the thing that goes wrong is the black string. The black string always exists as a solution to the equations of motion, but it picks up extra unwanted negative modes if the temperature gets too long, if the temperature gets too high. The reason being is that because the temperature is high, the black hole, the black string is very thin, and when the ratio of the thinness of the black hole to the length, sorry, the thinness of the black string to the length of the black string exceeds a certain ratio, you get a instability, a what's called a Gregory-Laflamme instability. In fact, invented, of course, by Laflamme, local hero, perimeter faculty member, now does quantum information theory. And so you get an extra, you get an extra negative mode that occurs for these space times. Okay, so you. Yeah, okay, so this is something that people, in fact, I think it was Sorkin, another perimeter faculty member who first speculated on the answer to this question, but it's not, he wrote some of the papers. There was also this guy Cole, who
I think you're confusing Sorkin.
Yeah. Really? Really? Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, Louis will know that much better than I. So there is some speculation that it's actually in the topology change in transition looks like there's another guy that I haven't told you about yet. That's the lumpy black string that I haven't. There's the lumpy black string that's not uniform around the extra dimension that doesn't change that I haven't mentioned yet because it's never it always has extra negative modes. But we'll see that it is relevant in a moment, but it never mediates decay. And there's some guy that looks like this. And people trying to construct this numerically, and it's a bit hard, apparently. But there's some guy that's like neither a black string nor a black hole, and that its topology isn't well defined because of this. And that's thought to be the transition between those two.
So it's singular?
It's they're all singular because they have singularities, but it's the topology, if you like, is singular. It's a at that point there's some point like the horizon's going to zero around the singularity.
There are such negative singularities in 5D.
Okay, so you pick up an extra negative mode if you go too hot. And you kill the solution entirely if you go too cold, and then you can calculate the free energy of all of these and see which is going to win. Perturbatively, you can do the calculation. So the black string, as I said, is very easy because the black string has this extra has the S1 symmetry. So you just take the black hole in one fewer dimension answer and multiply it by L. The black hole is hard. When the black hole is way, way smaller than the size of the extra dimension, you can just take the five-dimensional Schwarzschild answer. But it's going to get corrections, which can, in the first instance, be calculated perturbatively. And the leading order correction is going to be something that's going to be nice to think about. Why is that negative? Why is that reducing the free energy of a black hole at fixed temperature? The answer is that the free energy of a black hole at fixed temperature is at fixed asymptotic temperature is lower in the presence of an extra dimension than it would be if you let that extra dimension go to infinity. It's lower because of the image black holes. So you can imagine going to some sort of ersatz covering space, and then there'd be a whole bunch of black holes, image black holes, periodically arrayed. The black hole will be attracted to those image black holes. They put each other in a lower gravitational potential. And that, in fact, is precisely responsible for that first order term. That's all that first order term is. In fact, it's a sort of Newtonian term.
I mean, it looks like this perturbation series is in pretty good shape, though, right? Because the transition is from beta is 2L. So you don't, I mean, and you don't care about it after that. So it looks like by just ignoring this, you're good to part 100.
That's actually going to turn out right. So first of all, I put dot, dot, dot. No one's ever calculated the dot, dot, dot. In fact, I only found this by looking up some obscure paper that no one else seemed to cite and seemed to have problems in it. I mean, reading the paper, it seemed to There seem to be problems with it. So by putting this here, I'm being slightly optimistic. I don't know if you saw a paper by.
You're saying I should interpolate the series from one term. And
that's. I mean, that's. That's right. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because Louis and friends did a numerical calculation, and that numerical calculation is way better than any of this. So you don't have to worry about this because everything I'm going to draw is just going to be based on the numerical calculation. So numerically, you can just construct these GR solutions if you're strong enough. Here is what it looks like. On the vertical axis, I'm plotting the free energy. I'm scaling out by this for reasons that will be confusing right now. In any event, I'm scaling out by this quantity. And on this axis, I'm putting the 1 over the temperature. So in that direction, you get colder. In that direction, you get hotter. So I guess it aligns with the thing at the top. And so here's what you find in terms of what the free energy is of these solutions as a function of the asymptotic temperature.
I'm a bit confused with that example. So very hot is very small black hole, right?
Very hot is very small black hole. That's right.
That approximation should be good.
All right. Right? Yeah, that's right. So the question is this, you're saying that this is flipped?
Yeah.
Temperature goes on top. High temperature should be good approximation. You're right. Thank you. Yes. So L over beta goes, right. Sending L over beta goes to beta over L is going to be a important part of the second half of this talk. So you're getting good practice now. Temperature goes in that direction. At the very highest energies, the only thing with an extra negative, very highest temperature, the only solution is the black string. The black hole doesn't exist. The black string has the lowest free energy. So having a low free energy is good. That means you're dominant. You want to be as low as possible on this graph. That means you're the dominant decay. So at very high temperature, the black string wins. And at very low temperature, the caged black hole wins with some numerical calculated numbers in here where the beta is approximately equal to L. And then what happens in the middle? So what happens here, this is what's called the merger point. This is this point. This is the point where the black hole is ceasing to exist because it's growing and consuming the extra dimension as being as large as a black hole can be, consistent with the extra dimension. And what's happening here is that the black string is ceasing to exist as a solution with one negative mode. The Gregory-Laflamme instability is setting in, and thereafter it has an extra negative mode and doesn't contribute to the dominant decay path. And in the middle here, these are actually joined by another solution, not depicted up here, which is the lumpy black string, a string that has the topology of a black string, but is non-uniform in the extra dimension. It doesn't have the same girth as you go up and down the extra dimension. And this is an interpolating solution that interpolates between the two of them. Because it's got an extra negative mode, it's got an extra negative mode because it's interpolating between them. It's like a mountain pass on the way between these two. And it's got higher free energy, so it doesn't matter in the sense that it's never the dominant decay path because it's always either a black hole or a black string. But it does round out the phase diagram and explain what's going on here. Okay, so this is actually quite a... people have known about this for years, this black hole, black string phase diagram. And that's what it looks like. And so are there any questions about that before I leave black holes and black strings again? Okay, so that's that set of decays. There's the black hole and black string decays. In fact, we've now seen that this is the full spectrum of decays of this space-time. And what I'm now going to do is explain to you how these set of decays are going to be related to these set of decays in a nice way. Okay, so now let's go back to the bubble of nothing. But before I go back to the bubble of nothing and describing the difference between the thermal and the quantum bubble of nothing decays, let's just talk about generally the distinction between thermal and quantum decays in one-dimensional quantum mechanics. in the simplest example. In fact, the bubbles are nothing. We'll see have exactly the same phenomenology. I mean, it's going to be the same story for the bubble of nothing in terms of its quantum versus thermal decays as it is in one-dimensional quantum mechanics. So there's no difference there. So in quantum mechanics, at finite temperature, you can tunnel through a barrier in x, u of x. You can thermally fluctuate to the top of the barrier, or you can do a hybrid process that thermally fluctuates partway up the barrier and then tunnels through the rest. The rate for this process is given by this expression. There's a thermal Boltzmann term, and there's a quantum WKB term. And you can see what's going on here. The thermal term wants you to fluctuate up as little as possible. What is this graph? This graph is the suppression you get from this term is that one, the suppression you get from that term is that one, as a function of x bar, as a function of where you first thermally fluctuate to before you then quantum mechanically tunnel through. So you should think of it as a two-step process, or maybe even a three-step process. You first thermally fluctuate to x bar, then you quantum mechanically tunnel through, conserving energy in the quantum part, to x bar bar, and then you classically roll out. It's the third step of the process from there. The thermal term obviously wants you to thermally fluctuate as little as possible. It wants you to start off as low as possible. On the other hand, the quantum term wants you to go as high as possible in order that you've got as little distance to tunnel through as you can, and furthermore that this the barrier is relatively shallower once you get up there. And so there's going to be an optimal trade-off between those two. But what that optimal trade-off is going to be a function of the temperature. So you can plot here the tunneling exponent, the tunneling suppression as a function of where you tunnel as a function of the temperature. So at very low temperature, you're really punished for fluctuating. And so it's a almost monotonically increasing function of where you start. And you just want to go right here. You want to do an almost pure quantum tunneling and not thermal fluctuate at all. At very high temperature, you want to do it very easy to fluctuate, so you'll just fluctuate all the way to the top, and the fastest possible decay is to go all the way to the top. And then you get this intermediate behavior at intermediate times. Just a couple of things to notice. You minimize the tunneling exponent. It's never the case that you just want to go from x equals 0, because this is quadratic around the bottom, at least the quadratic potentials around the bottom. You always want to thermally fluctuate up a tiny bit before tunneling through the rest. But at very low temperatures, you want to thermally fluctuate almost nothing. At very high temperatures, you want to thermally fluctuate almost everything. Or in fact, at high temperatures, you do want to, and even at intermediate temperatures, you want to thermally fluctuate all the way to the top. There's some finite temperature beyond which you just want to go all the way to the top and not bother quantum mechanically tunneling at all. That very high temperature is set by the inverse period up top there. And then there's this intermediate set of solutions where you want to do something else. That there's two locally optimal ways as a function of x bar to tunnel. So it's getting better, 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 and then there's a locally optimal way, then it gets worse, 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 then there's a pessimal way, and then it gets better, better, better all the way to the top again. And so that's the solution here. There's a optimal a locally optimal place, a locally optimal place, and then a pessimal place to tunnel to, and there can be some exchange of dominance between those two. And so for this potential here, this is what the phase diagram looks like as a function of t. Let me say one more thing about these places. You can differentiate this. If you want to know where the optimal place to tunnel is.
Can you check this in the solutions of the Schrodinger equation? It's only 1D quantum mechanics.
Can you check the WKB approximation in the
Schrodinger?
Yeah, so you should be able to because there are exactly soluble one-dimensional examples, as you know well, and the WKB approximation should be, I mean, the WKB approximation is exact for a harmonic oscillator. Unfortunately, that's not quite good enough for what we're trying to do. But it's there should be some combination of harmonic oscillators where the WKB approximation is controlled.
You just take all the energy eigenfunctions in that well.
Yeah.
And then compute the amplitude at finite temperature.
Yes. Yeah, I think this should all be, if you were extremely skeptical of the one-dimensional quantum mechanical WKB approximation, you could verify that this works for some choice examples.
See these graphs, the IE versus X
bar, which should be computable. Right. So, I mean, here's an analysis. If you believe the WKB approximation, this will do it for you.
It's pretty heuristic, right? Because you're introducing this X bar.
Well, so in the semi-classical approximation, this is all fine. If you're in the WKB limit, in which if these evaluate to a half each, then you're not going to believe anything that I'm doing. But in the WKB limit, where T is an H bar are small relative to the energy scales of the barrier, then the WKB approximation should be totally fine, and this calculation should be reliable.
But you're going up, the graphs you do are for larger T. So
there's still a separation of scales. As long as T is always less than the height, significantly less than the height of the barrier, then there should, As well as, I'm saying semi-classical, by which I mean H bar small, there's also, if you like, a semi-cold approximation going on here, where I'm doing an expansion both in H bar and in T, but there's similar constraints I'm going to have to run both, and if I'm in the semi-classical and the semi-cold approximation, then this should all be totally fine. But on the other hand, you definitely could presumably find one-dimensional quantum mechanics examples that show that this all works out. Here's an interesting fact. Differentiate this function with regards to x bar, with regards to the starting point. If it's going to be and then put it to zero, that puts you at one of the locally optimal places, or maybe the locally pessimal place. What do you find? What you find is that you get this. And what does this tell you? This tells you, so I've been sort of having a WKB philosophy here. I could also have had an instanton philosophy where I calculated instantons. What this tells you is that the period of that instanton has to be 1/T. The Euclidean period of that instanton has to be 1/T. In other words, by insisting that the instantons that describe my decay have a period of 1/T, as would a Euclidean period of 1/T, I am automatically putting myself at one of these, I'm automatically extremizing over X bar. I'm automatically putting myself at one of these critical points of this expression. So if I look for ones that have Euclidean period 1/T, I'll just pick out these three solutions and nothing else. That's right. So as you will know well, if you've played around with the same set in, say, De Sitter space, where this transition is called the Coleman-DeLucia-Hawking-Moss transition, or indeed even in one-dimensional quantum mechanics, by playing with this potential, I can actually do, at low enough temperature, it always looks like this. At high enough temperature, it always looks like this. But what exactly goes on in the middle here, I can change by changing the stuff. I can make it into a... I can make it be a second order transition rather than first order transition, or I can add more first order transitions. This is the one, I mean, this is sort of a typical thing, and this is the one that's going to be true for the bubble of nothing in five dimensions. But actually, gravity in very high dimensions gets very peculiar, and in high enough dimensions, this is going to become a second order transition rather than a first order transition. But let's stick in five dimensions. Okay, so what does it look like? The tunneling rate. This is what it looks like as a function of T. At very low temperature, the only instanton you have is the thermally assisted quantum, the quantum tunneling instanton that maybe gets a small thermal assist that rides it a little up before it tunnels through. At very high temperature, the only thing you have is the purely thermal one, because this intermediate solution has disappeared, and this other solution has disappeared, and the optimal way is just to go straight to the top, all the way to the top is the optimal way across the barrier. Whereas at intermediate points, there's something that more complicated happens. Very high temperature, pure thermal. Very low temperature, the thermally assisted quantum wins, with some funny phase structure in the middle. This point here is the point at which the purely thermal instanton goes from being a local minimum a local minimum as it is here to a local maximum as it is here. That's sometimes called from interstitial space, that's called the point at which the Hawking-Moss instanton picks up an extra negative mode. And then beyond there, it's got an extra negative mode. This point here is the point at which there are no more local extrema of the tunneling action. You just want to, it's just a monotonically decreasing function of x bar, the tunneling exponent. It just gets faster and faster and faster the higher x bar gets. And then between those two points, there's this intermediate solution. There's an extra solution, which is this locally pessimal thing that has an extra negative mode, which is the worst possible x bar you could choose. It's the absolutely worst place you could fluctuate to before trying to tunnel through in terms of tunneling rate. And so that's what the phase diagram of instantons looks like for quantum and thermal tunneling in quantum mechanics. And it's actually also what the phase diagram looks like for these bubble of nothing solutions. Any questions about that? Yeah. Yes.
So I guess these stars, there's always sort of another thing that moves there, but is there any sense in which there's some scale invariance that appears at these critical points, or is it always, it just gets obliterated by the lower?
So there is an eigenvalue that's going through zero, at least here.
Yeah.
So this is also the phase transition to a tunnel inflation off the top. So I guess there is a critical point there.
Yeah.
This is what's known as a cusp catastrophe, and this is a fold catastrophe. So they've got different flavors, but the cusp catastrophe should have criticality, I guess. Yeah, I mean, we know it has criticality. It's the phase transition to a tunnel inflation. Okay, so the point is that I've been building towards is that those two look jolly similar. Partly because I drew them jolly similar, but actually, as we'll see, there is a deep-seated reason behind that. The phase transition of tunneling instanton, the phase of tunneling instantons looks a lot like the phases of the black holes and black strings, with one difference. And the difference is that high temperature for tunneling instantons is low temperature for black holes and black strings. Why is this? The reason for this is to do with a symmetry of the problem that I originally posed. The problem I originally posed was the tunneling of at finite temperature with an extra dimension, which means that the Euclidean instanton that describes these decays, that describes all of these decays, both the black hole type decays and the bubble of nothing type decays, all of those Euclidean instantons have two asymptotic circles. They have one asymptotic circle that's just the physical circle where the extra dimension is, and they have another asymptotic circle that is the thermal direction, and the instantons don't know the difference between those two. They're just two asymptotic circles, and so by switching those two circles, I can switch from a bubble of nothing type decay to a black hole type decay, and then you can see that we're going to start reading off how the various bits meet each other.
One is the time, and the other is the compact direction.
That's right, yeah. So let's, what are the decays of hot flat space? The instanton asymptotes to R3 cross S1 cross S1, one of which has length beta, one of which has length L, and there's going to be some permutation symmetry when I permute beta and L. There are two such instantons that permute to, that asymptote to R3 cross S1 cross S1. One instanton is the Euclidean black string. The Euclidean black string has this metric, and so Z is one compact direction, and W is the other compact direction. That's a diagram of it. So this box here is there's the Z and the W directions. Z, I guess I can say in this country. And the that square is the two S1s onto each other. And now here's the point. Even though there's only one instanton here, there's also going to be another instanton, this instanton does double duty because I have two options for how I continue it. I can either continue Z or I can continue W, and those two describe two different decays, as in continue from Euclidean time to Lorentzian time. One of those decays is the black string, and the other is the thermal bubble of nothing. If I continue W, then I just get the metric for a black string back again. If I continue Z, then I get the metric for a thermal bubble of nothing, what I'm calling a thermal bubble of nothing. So if I continue W, then you just get the standard black string metric. If I continue Z, then W is now not time pinching off at a horizon, but space pinching off at the lip of the bubble of nothing. And the size of the extra dimension goes from one asymptotically down to zero at R equals R. And then it's just a static space time, just as you would expect for a something sitting at the top of a barrier. It just sits there, not moving, statically, but with an extra negative mode, unstable to either growing or shrinking in either direction.
Sorry, what boundary conditions are you applying around the compact direction now? In particular, are the fermions periodic or random?
I don't have any fermions. No fermions.
If
I did have fermions, what would they be?
What?
If I did have fermions? Sorry, I don't have any fermions in my theory. I've just got Einstein gravity. No fermions.
Well, right. I mean, you presumably know the story about fermions.
I do, yeah, but I'm sidestepping that whole story by not having any fermions.
Traditionally, you're talking about
this. I don't know. I mean, I don't have any fermions in my theory. As you know from your question, if I did want to add fermions to this theory, which I don't, but let's suppose I did. If I did want to add fermions to my theory, then I would have two options. There are two spin structures I could put on the fermion, one of which would be periodic around the extra dimension, and the other of which would be anti-periodic around the extra dimension. And as you also know from your question, one of those permits a bubble of nothing, and one of those doesn't permit a bubble of nothing. One of those provides a sort of, if you like, hardcore Casimir repulsion that stops the extra dimension sealing up, and one of them doesn't. And so I guess if I wanted to add fermions to my theory, I could do that, and then I'd have a choice, and that choice would be, do I want to still have a bubble of nothing instability, or don't I? And if I chose the fermion spin structure that permits bubbles of nothing, then I still have the structure. If I chose the fermion spin structure that doesn't permit bubbles of nothing, then I'd be stable.
But then if you do allow them, then your Hamiltonian becomes unbounded from below.
The Hamiltonian is unbounded from below of this theory, even without fermions. There are states of arbitrarily negative energy in these theories. The positive energy theory does not apply to even forgetting about fermions, just to the theory I first wrote down, the Hamiltonian is unbounded from below. That does not mean that it's still everything's perturbatively well defined, but the bubble of nothing is an indication that there's something non-perturbatively funny about your space-time, and the Hamiltonian is unbounded from below. There are states of arbitrarily negative energy in this theory. But there aren't ghosts. I mean, there's not ghosts or anything. It's just if you tunnel out far enough, there's states of arbitrarily negative energy. Just like the inverse harmonic oscillator, for example, in quantum mechanics, there's states of arbitrarily negative energy. Except in this case, you don't.
Yeah, but yeah. If you're saying I'm just applying perturbation theory, that's all I care about. Fine.
No, I'm doing even non-perturbatively. It's still everything I'm saying is still fine. And you have this instability, and you're going to end up rolling down this instability out to infinity. I mean, you're going to tunnel through and then roll down. The theory is still well defined. Let me keep going with this, and then we can stop here.
I would not agree, but keep going.
It's not a ghost.
In the same way that the inverse harmonic oscillator is well defined.
Yeah, I mean,
time evolution questions make sense.
But quantum mechanically, it's not going to. But
It quantum mechanically does make sense. And, I mean, it's even better than the inverse harmonic oscillator because we have to tunnel through to the inverse harmonic oscillator regime. And anyway, let me keep going with this and then we can discuss that later. The Euclidean black hole looks like that. It's an uglier metric because it doesn't have this symmetry around the extra dimension. And again, you have two choices about how you can continue it. One of which gives you the what's called the caged black hole, and the other of which gives you the bubble of nothing. So you have two instantons, each for this decay, each of which are doing double duty. And the fact it's the double duty of each that's going to give rise to this high temperature, low temperature duality that relates the bubble of nothing style decays to the black hole style decays. We have our four decays, and these two are given by the same instanton, and these two are given by the same instanton, just different analytic continuations of that same instanton. And by switching the, in one I continue beat, I have two asymptotic S1s. One of them I call this one Euclidean time, and that one the compact extra dimension, and that gives me one of them. And then by relabeling the axes, I get the other one. I get a black hole or a bubble of nothing, or a quantum bubble of nothing, or a thermal bubble of nothing, or a black string. And since relabeling the axes doesn't change the Euclidean action, it doesn't change the decay rate. So all I'm doing is relabeling the axes, and that gives me a high temperature, low temperature duality that relates nucleating bubbles of nothing to nucleating black holes and black strings. Beta over L goes to L over beta under this duality, because what I used to be calling beta, I'm now calling L, and vice versa. Beta was the period of the thermal circle, and L was the period of the extra dimension, and I'm switching which one I'm calling which. Okay, so that gives you this high temperature, low temperature duality. I'll just quote what the decay rates are, but it follows from reasonably simple arithmetic from what I've been saying. The thermal bubble of nothing has a decay rate. They're all exponentially suppressed. In L5 here is the five-dimensional Planck length. The thermal bubble of nothing has a decay rate that goes like e to the minus beta times something. It really is a thermal decay. It goes like e to the minus 1 over t. It just has a Boltzmann factor sitting there. And it's related by a beta goes to L and L goes to beta symmetry to the nucleation of a black string. That's it. This is precise. There might be one loop correction sitting here, but there's nothing else that lives with a 1 over... there's nothing else that lives in this exponent. And that's because there are no corrections to the black string. It just sits there. Equivalently, it's because there's no movement of the instanton in Euclidean time. It just goes, jumps to the top and just sits there. So it's very easy to calculate the rate. More sophisticatedly, there's the same duality between the caged black hole and the quantum bubble of nothing. So this term here is the term that Witten calculated, modulo a factor of 2. This term here is the term that Witten calculated, and then these are the corrections, and maybe I've got it right by this stage, to do with the fact that you've got a finite temperature. So these are the corrections to do with the fact that it's actually easier to make a bubble of nothing by quantum mechanical tunneling even than Witten said, because you get a small thermal boost that lifts you a little up the barrier before you tunnel through. So these are some corrections that make it easier to tunnel through the barrier. And for a black hole, similarly, this is the five-dimensional Schwarzschild answer. And then as we discussed, it's easier to tunnel to make a black hole in a cage when the extra dimension isn't infinite than you might imagine. It's easier because you get attracted to the image black holes. And so this whole thing means that the spacetimes we're discussing have four decays to make a quantum black hole, a 4D black hole, a 5D black hole, a 4D black hole also being called a black string, a thermal bubble of nothing or a thermally assisted quantum bubble of nothing. And these, if you take beta goes to L and you switch those two, the decay rate stays the same and the spectrum of decays stays the same. You still have four decays and those four decays are still gonna have the same rate. But the identity of those decays switches. So where it used to be that it was fastest to make a 5D black hole, then a 4D black hole, then down like that. You now have the same decay rate, but now what used to be the rate for the 5D black hole becomes the rate for the quantum bubble of nothing, et cetera. In other words, you have a high temperature, low temperature duality. So here's a way to write that. Here's the decay rate, just putting everything together as a, so lower means a faster decay rate. And there is a thermally assisted, where should we start? At very high temperature, the best decay is to do a black string. And then at the self-dual point, it takes over, and the absolutely, totally optimal decay, globally optimal decay, is to do a thermally assisted quantum bubble of nothing. But you can ask conditional questions. For example, what's the fastest bubble of nothing decay? And then there's some more complicated phenomena here, and you see that it just mirrors itself on the other side, and you can now read off the dualities that go back and forth. The Gregory-Lefram instability is dual to the what you might call the Hawking-Moss common dilution, the point at which the Hawking-Moss picks up an extra negative mode, Hawking-Moss picking up an extra negative mode, and then everything else maps across. The lumpy black string is dual to the bubble of nothing that's pessimal, dual to the absolutely worst possible way you could tunnel across the barrier. That's what the lumpy black string is. I think this is the first use for a lumpy black string, if this is a use at all. It's telling you it's the worst thing you could possibly do. And all the other things map across. Let me see if I explain that a bit more carefully. Right, okay. So what happens under this duality? So the thermal bubble of nothing, I mean, under this duality, the thermal bubble of nothing has a mechanical instability. It just sits there, the bubble of nothing, excluding a certain region, but neither growing nor shrinking. But if you ping it, then something will happen. The bubble of nothing will either seal back up and space-time will go back to how it was before with some radiation, or it'll grow and then just start forming one of these walls of annihilation that leave nothing in their wake. On the other hand, that's a thermodynamic instability, a mechanical instability of the bubble of the thermal bubble of nothing. That's dual to a thermodynamic instability of the black string in the heat bath. So the black string in the heat bath is thermodynamically unstable because it's just sitting there right at the top of its free energy barrier. And if you send in a photon or extract a photon more or less than you should have done, it'll either fall off in one direction and start getting hotter, or it'll fall off in the other direction and start getting colder and live forever. So a bubble of nothing needs to be big enough, certain size, in order to survive. A black string needs to be a certain size in order to survive, one for a mechanical reason, one for a thermodynamic reason. Those two facts are dual to each other. Another thing that gets hit by this duality, the thermal assist of a quantum bubble of nothing. So a bubble of nothing is slightly easier to make at finite temperature than it is at zero temperature, even if you're going to use a mainly quantum process, and that's because you get a small thermal assist. That fact is dual to the fact that it's easier to make a black hole with a non-zero, with when you have an extra dimension that's not infinitely large, because the black hole gets attracted to its image black holes out through the extra dimension. In other words, you can think of the thermal assist that you get as being, if you like, attracted to image black holes, but image bubbles are nothing that exists in Euclidean time rather than in real space. And then all the other points map across to one another, and you get this pretty picture. And in fact, in higher dimensions, you can calculate it again, and you get something even more complicated. I mean, you get the same things here, but this starts moving across here, this starts moving across here, and then everything, you don't even get this nice separation into two sides. It gets pretty complicated indeed. So that's it. That sort of, if you like, unifies these two stories. This Witten story about bubbles and nothing, this Gross-Perry-Yahti story about the nucleation of black holes. It turns out that they're not just two nice, that adding these two kinds of instability to what would otherwise be stable Minkowski space, you don't just get the sort of sum of these two, you actually get some they start interacting with each other, and then you find out that there's a high temperature, low temperature duality that relates them. Quantum gravity is hard. Simple toy systems are useful. Quantum black holes are well studied. Maybe the next thing we should be thinking about is bubbles of nothing. One thing I'm thinking about is trying to calculate the entropy of these bubbles of nothing. The thermal bubble of nothing, you can actually calculate its entropy directly from the methods I just described, and it's zero.
What was zero?
The entropy of a thermal bubble of nothing.
So then what is it that you want to
calculate? The entropy of a quantum bubble of nothing.
Oh, okay.
So you can calculate the ADM mass. You know that the duality relates the temperature and size of the... you know that the temperature... That, sorry, but there's a duality between nucleating black strings and nucleating thermal bubbles of nothing. And that duality operates at the level of the decay rate. It operates at the level of the action. All Euclidean quantities of these two have to be the same because they're given by the same Euclidean instanton, just different continuations thereof. However, Lorentzian quantities don't have to be the same. Lorentzian quantities can be different because those depend on the Lorentzian continuation. So for example, the critical black string you make, the mass of that, and the mass of the critical bubble of nothing you make, they're both positive because they're both sitting at the top of a barrier, but they're different. There's a factor of two difference under the duality. Similarly, the entropy is different. In fact, the black string is heavier than the bubble of nothing, but it precisely compensates by being heavier for having a non-zero entropy in such a way that the decay rate ends up the same. And this, if you like, is a derivation that the entropy of a thermal bubble of nothing is zero. But a thermal bubble of nothing just sits there. It doesn't have any Lorentzian horizons. So it shouldn't be any surprise that it has a zero entropy. But a quantum bubble of nothing, the same is not true of. A quantum bubble of nothing, it grows. And it actually grows so fast that it causally separates antipodal observers. There's a Lorentzian horizon in this space-time. If I'm on one side of the bubble of nothing, and you're on the other side of the bubble of nothing, then we can no longer communicate after a certain length of time because there is a hole in space-time between us, a hole in space-time that grows faster than it can be circumambulated. Okay, that's it. That's my story. Thank you. Yeah.
What's the difference between thermal bubble of nothing and a quantum?
Sure.
How could you have non-quantum bubble
of nothing? So this is some potential that you should imagine us tunneling through. So the quantum bubble of nothing is the one discovered by Witten, but if you like, is here. If you're going to ask me a tough question, the tough question you could ask me is, what is the labels of this diagram? And maybe I mean, I don't know what that means. I'll get rid of that entirely.
I want to understand what you were saying. What is a thermal bubble of nothing?
A thermal bubble of nothing is, I could write down the, I wrote down the metrics here, but let me, a thermal bubble of nothing is what you get by continuing, is the bubble of nothing that's made by a thermal fluctuation process that you get by continuing Z in this thing here, whereas the quantum bubble of nothing was the one that was discovered by Witten, which is a where you continue instead of the Euclidean black hole. So I could write down the metrics. The description that I've been given is that the thermal bubble of nothing has positive energy and is static, and you should think of as, and is also smaller than the quantum bubble of nothing. So it's sort of living up here. This is the thermal bubble of nothing. And the rate goes like e to the minus something over t. And this is e to the minus something over 1 over h right, bar. Right. And that's the quantum bubble of nothing. So this is the distinction that I've been trying to make. Maybe what's concerning you is that it sounds like this is a
I guess what I'm concerned about is how could something be thermal and have no entropy? That's what you always say. Temperature, if you have temperature, you have entropy.
There's entropy that lives in the gravitons, the perturbative excitations of the gravitons. The question is whether in addition to that entropy, there is a non-perturbative entropy associated with the bubble of nothing. For example, you could ask the same question of a black hole, and the answer for a black hole we know to be yes. As well as the thermal entropy and the graviton field that surrounds it, there's also a non-perturbative entropy that lives in the black hole. And you could ask the same question of a thermal bubble of nothing, and the answer is no there. Here, I'm motivating that the answer you might imagine could be yes.
Actually, it's no.
Okay. And so this is, that's that set of questions. You might worry here that what you're doing is you're doing a classical topology change, which, I mean, here you can understand that topology is changing quantum mechanically because we believe that quantum gravity can change topology. Here it looks like we're doing a classical topology change because there's no H bar in there, there's just a T. That's actually a pretty funny thing because the ultraviolet catastrophe in Bilberry means that when you have a finite temperature, it's taking the classical limit of a thermal field theory is not the same, I mean, is a subtle business because of the ultraviolet catastrophe. In other words, I mean, one way to say it is there's factors of H bar hidden in that T as well. So depending on how you're going to take the classical limit, how you scale T with H bar. So I talk about this in the paper a bit. Even though this is a thermal process, the temperature carries with it sort of factors of H bar. Any more questions? Yes.
Which is the most relevant process for cosmology?
For cosmology? well, in our past light cone, we don't have any bubbles of nothing. Unless the whole universe started off with a Hawking Turok instanton, in which case it was a bubble of nothing that kicked the whole thing off. But
you're trying to. Studying these as instabilities of theories.
Yes.
So how many theories can you exclude on the basis of all?
Yeah. So I mean, I guess there's probably to answer your original question, the most relevant for cosmology is the black hole. The black string instability, given that we may well have nucleated primordial black holes in our past, and if the temperature got too large, we will have done, and there are limits on primordial black holes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do this directly with a ITEC cosmology because I just did it because it's some pretty picture, but cosmologically relevant processes, you might worry about nucleating black holes in our past, and about some, there's even some puzzle about there's more black holes than there should be or something.
Sorry, you mean today?
I mean, whether this is any relevance whatsoever to that, I wouldn't put myself on, but yeah, so black holes, black strings could be in our past. If you make a bubble of nothing in our past, it better have sealed up by now, otherwise we'd be dead. You could maybe use that to exclude some theories.
But if I fix the size of the extra dimension, I fix L, what range of L can I exclude given the sort of minimal assumptions about the thermal history of the universe?
You're also going to make, I mean, my feeling is that in order for this to be relevant, it's going to become increasingly relevant the further back you try and push it, the hotter you try and push everything. So, and it's presumably, if you had some aggressive theory of extra dimensions, I guess that would be the other, of large extra dimensions, that this could be relevant to that. So when the temperature is getting Planckian, then this starts to be a concern, even before the temperature gets Planckian. But yeah, if you have some large extra dimension theory that pushes the Planck scale down, then you might also worry that you reach the Planck, large extra dimension theory in which the true Planck scale is lower, then you might worry that,
you could nucleate
these things.
So you can't make the universe by inverting the vacuum bubble, the quantum bubble. You can't have the bubble of nothing shrink and then the inverse of that is. You're saying, but is that right?
So there's two senses of the inverse of that instanton. One sense of the inverse of that instanton Let's just look at the quantum bubble of nothing. Just get rid of all the other stuff.
I was going to ask. I remember asking before a couple of years ago about whether you could do that. You answering no.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Which you can do.
So there is going to be no. It's going to be answer to one of those questions.
But.
Okay. So what? You start off with Minkowski 3-1 cross S1, and you tunnel to a bubble of nothing space time in which there's nothing in here and something out there. And what you're doing is, I mean, actually, this is a classical space time that has a contracting bubble of nothing, but you're imagining sort of going along, jumping from there onto there. So here's a question to which the answer is, can you do it? And the answer is yes. And then there's going to be another question to which the answer is no. The question to which the answer is yes is, well, you know you can jump from there along here and then tunnel to that. And the rate that the Witten process. By the inverse of a bubble of nothing, you could mean the following. You could mean, suppose you have an incoming contracting bubble of nothing, a space-time with an incoming contracting bubble of nothing. Can it spontaneously seal up and then form a, and then just recover empty space-time? That's unlikely to happen, but it can happen. It has a rate that goes like e to the minus 1 over h bar. In fact, the ratio of these two rates is given by the principle of detailed balance. So that the answer to that question is yes. Then there's another question, which is, suppose you started off not with a contracting bubble of nothing in space-time, but suppose that the thing I started off with was just literally nothing, like, you know, whatever's sitting in here, the nothing space-time state. And then...
What is that?
That's a space-time without without any space-time. It's an empty space-time. And can you tunnel from that
more than empty
to a bubble of nothing? Now, as you know, I've spoken here before on this question, and I don't want to reopen old wounds, but Neil and I have some history on this topic, and my claim is that the Hawking-Turok instanton is precisely trying to do that. It's trying to tunnel from nothing to something using a bubble of nothing. The instanton that you and Stephen Hawking wrote down was precisely the Einstein frame version of a quantum bubble of nothing. And I had some story about why this does not work. I constructed it as some limit or something, and then you can show that it doesn't work. Great.
Somehow the space-time where there is space-time, but it's all out at infinity, originally.
You mean this one?
Can tunnel to something.
It can tunnel just, I mean, here's a sort of intuitive.
Physically, I would be hard pressed to distinguish between the space time with nothing and the space time where all the space time is out of infinity.
We're getting into dark territory now, but this is. Here's an explanation. I mean, even though the space time is all out of infinity, it's an exquisitely carefully, I mean, there's some limit, mm-hmm. and there's always an infinite amount of space-time no matter how far back you go. And it's an extremely well-balanced thing in such a way that even though, unlike almost every space-time you could put on that slice, the bubble of nothing is sealing up classically. It's never going to quite classically complete its seal-up, but the difference between this space-time and this space-time is, I mean, outside of some box, they're essentially indistinguishable. So there's just some finite region, and you just need something to happen in some finite region. And generally, that can always happen unless there's some reason it can't.
I was just going to ask the same thing about the thermal bubble of nothing. So this thermal bubble of nothing, if I perturb it, it also runs off to infinity. Is that, if I want to run the movie backwards, is the same basic answers?
Yes. So actually, the thermal bubble of nothing would be even... Well, okay. The thermal bubble of nothing, as a solution to Einstein's equation, just sits there forever. It's sitting at the top. Here it is. It's this metric with... replacing dz squared by minus dt, dt squared. So it's just going to sit there, and so it's unstable to either falling in this direction or falling in that direction. I guess if you wanted to, you could say, okay, now I'm going to perturb it by epsilon and then run it off to infinity, and then I'm going to play that tape backwards and have an incoming bubble of nothing. Well, it's just absolutely exquisitely tuned so that it just comes and sort of sits there as t goes to infinity, as t goes to plus infinity now. But, so it sort of runs up from t equals minus infinity with a huge bubble and then just sits there. Here it doesn't even need to tunnel to get small. Here it just you just need to nudge it and it'll get small and small and seal up. So there the tunneling rate is not exponentially suppressed even.
Okay.